through cobweb-covered spare parts in Skull Factory to properly answer them. My eye contact drifts, and I get distracted and fidgety. It's at these desperate times that I try one of the three name-teasing techniques I've learned over the years. 1. The Take Two. A friend joins my side at the party, and I say to the mystery man, "Oh, have you met Chad?" Hoping that Chad will put his hand out and lean in with a "Nice to meet you. Sorry, what was your name?" If Chad nails it, I give him a high five later. If he doesn't, I throw a cup of punch in his face so he gets it right next time. 2. Spell check. If I don't remember their name, but I think it was long or complicated, then I ask them to spell it for me. If they say P-A-R-D-E-E-P, then I'm all aces. If they say P-A-M, then I'm an idiot. High risk, high reward. 3. The anecdote wait. This is an absolutely terrible move that I use all the time. It involves waiting until they finally tell an anecdote where they refer to themselves by their first name. For example, "So my ex-boyfriend finally said, 'Catherine, it's either me or that cat, and I picked the cat.'" With an anecdote like that, you just found out her name is Catherine, so you're good to start using it. Also, no cat jokes. Sure, these techniques look easy, but the truth is that they're awkward and embarrassing to use with no guaranteed results. Let's be honest, it's much more satisfying to actually remember and drop their name right at the beginning of a sentence with confidence, like you've been old friends for years. Then they'll look back at you with beaming eyes and a bright smile that shows you two are getting to know each other. Hey, maybe you'll see each other again. Maybe you'll become friends. Maybe you'll do business. Maybe you'll start dating. All because you remembered their name at the party. Nice move, you. Awesome.
Somebody flashing their high beams at you to warn you about the cops. Tired and groggy, you're driving late at night, whipping down side streets and back paths to get home a bit faster, your eyelids drooping, your body achy and sore. Occasionally there are headlights in the opposite direction, blurry whiz-by streaks of bright white, shift workers, truck drivers, and party animals, all riding the lonely roads, trying to get somewhere quick. Then suddenly, an approaching car flashes its high beams at you. Blinded, you sit up, awake and alert, checking all your mirrors, slowing the car down. What's going on, you wonder? Until a few seconds later, when you pass a cop car with its lights off, sitting on the side of the road, a patient and silent predator, waiting for its prey. "Thank you," you whisper under your breath as you drive by under the speed limit. "Thank you, thank you, thank you." Part of what makes this great is the fact that the flasher is going the opposite way and can't really get the favor returned. You don't know him or her. Him or her don't know you. But they sort of threw the favor out there. A warm, passing smile on a dark drive. No payback required or expected. It's just the late-night driver's pact. A rebellious fight the police stance that helps everyone out in the pocketbook a bit. So you smile as you drive on, and when you see another car heading in the opposite direction, you know what to do. Flash them high beams, sister. Flash them bright and light up the night. Awesome.
The Man Couch. The Man Couch is any couch conveniently located near the change rooms in a woman's clothing store. You can tell which one's the Man Couch because it's generally covered in man. Most are either text messaging, illegally napping, or staring straight ahead, jaws dropped, pupils dilated, completely zoned out, their arms full of purses and bags from other stores. Now, the Man Couch really is good for everybody. For women, it gives them a convenient place to find their male shopping companion, There they are, right outside the change room. This is much better than having to track them down in the magazine section of the bookstore or in the line for fries at the food court. Also, it's great knowing your purse is safe and there is an opinion available if you want it. For guys, the man couch is a place of solace and comfort. Its giving cushions provide a quiet reprieve from the unrelenting day of shopping. Surrounding guys are fellow travelers with worn, weary eyes telling cautionary tales of seven-sweater fashion shows and lineups for hemming. Yeah, it's a tired, quiet gang sitting there in the couch hostel at the back of the store. So thank you, man couch. Without you, our calves would be burning even more. Our boyfriends would be at the record store. And we'd all be sitting on the floor. The man couch, ladies and gentlemen. Awesome.
The shampoo head massage you sometimes get at the hairdresser. Close your eyes, dip your head in the sink, and relax as that warm shower gets sprayed all over your scalp. Then, just smile softly as the hairdresser tenderly rubs and massages your head with shampoo and conditioner. Relax, unwind, and detensify as you slowly climax toward total scalp actualization. Awesome.
Finding the TV remote after looking forever.
Look! There it is! Wedged way down in the couch cushions this whole time! Awesome!
Adrenaline. Did you know you have two yellow 9-volt battery-sized adrenal glands in your body, just chilling out, maxing, and relaxing all cool on top of your kidneys? Someone told me this, and I checked it out. Turns out, it's true. It seems as though your adrenal glands are kind of like those British Royal Guards with the big black fuzzy hats who stand like statues in front of Buckingham Palace. They just stand there quietly, not doing much really, just enjoying the brown slippery beach that is your kidneys. However, if anything startling should happen that requires your attention, like you're about to give a speech at a wedding, a twig cracks outside your tent, or your doorbell rings in the middle of the night, then they leap into action, jumping out of their peaceful slumber to squeeze a big dose of adrenaline right into your body, pumping you up and turning you into a primal, warrior-like version of yourself. When the tension runs high and adrenaline is secreted into your body, some crazy things can happen, which is sometimes called the fight-or-flight response. Your heart rate increases, and specifically, your body starts sending blood to all your big muscles and diverts it away from non-critical parts of your body like your brain, immune system, and stomach. I guess someone figured you could digest the sandwich after you killed the bear. Your pupils dilate and you get tunnel vision. Quite literally, adrenaline also reduces your peripheral vision, which together with your big wide pupils helps you focus on what lies ahead. You can't quite see through walls, but if a crow is diving at your eyes, you might be able to swat it away better. Your body gets ready to boot it. In addition to the rising heart rate, your body starts turning piles of inner goo into sugar and fills you with energy. You might not feel pain as easily, so the raspberry bushes that shred your legs when you're running out of the forest won't slow you down. What's also great about adrenaline is that you don't have to control it. It kicks into high gear when it figures you need a boost. I think it's kind of cool knowing that your body will help you out when you need it most. Punch me in the face, and suddenly my internal British Royal Guard tosses away his fuzzy black cap, cracks his neck, and rolls up his sleeves. And really, isn't it that little dose of adrenaline that helps you do a better job when you need it most? It's a natural upper, helping you nail the big speech, ace the final exam, or perhaps flee both of those scenes. There's a reason some people become adrenaline junkies. The boost you get from your adrenal glands, waking up and getting out of bed, is intoxicating. Sure, it fuzzes up your thinking and sends your intestines on sabbatical, but it pumps you up. So remember, when something important in your life is about to happen, you can count on your good pal adrenaline to be there cheering you on and helping you fight the good fight. Awesome.
Getting a trucker to blow his horn. Truckers have the best horns. Those things mean business. They're loud and thundering and slap you in the face. See, when a hatchback lets out an itty-bitty beep-beep telling you the light turned green, it sounds like a seagull telling other seagulls, "Hey, there's a guy tossing crusts over here." When a trucker does the same thing, it's a full-on roar, the sound a tugboat would make if it was about to crash into a lighthouse. Sometimes, when you're driving down the highway, the hours keep going and going and going. Rod Stewart, Meatloaf, and the whole mixtape gets stale. Conversation dies down, and it's just a blur of interstate walls and rest station signs out the window. For kids without distractions, it can seem like days back there, strapped right in and sitting in a numbing silence, broken up only by potholes and passing motorcycles. That's why getting a trucker to blow his horn is great. It's a laugh and a fun little interactive break from highway monotony. Plus, it's a time passer, because you have to get the driver to sort of ease up beside the truck first, which isn't always easy. It's a secret moment on wheels, a honking highway holler, and some good old-fashioned bonding in the fast lane. So let's give thanks to truckers for not taking life too seriously, for indulging our simple pleasures, and for rocking that blasting air horn in a special moment we like to call awesome.
When there's leftover cake in the office kitchen. Ever had a birthday party in the office? If you have, you know that it's usually celebrated with a streamer-covered cubicle, a signed birthday card, and a mid-afternoon cake. And while everyone says they don't want that cake, let's be honest, after you start including it in your diet 2 to 3 times a week, you can't stop jonesing for that 2 o'clock sugar rush. Of course, after the parties happen, the partially eaten leftovers find their way to the office kitchen. To get in on the game, you'll need to follow these top 4 tips for scoring leftover office cake. 1. Keep extra plastic forks and paper plates at your desks. Because how many times do you happen upon a partially devoured cake, only to notice that there's nothing to eat it with? Put up your icing-smeared hand if you've ever dug into that cake anyway. Yeah, I'm talking about slicing the cake with a coffee stirrer, using a piece of paper from the printer as your plate, and tossing it back like a crumbly jello shooter. It's not pretty, and it's sort of crossing the line between friendly coworker and office raccoon. I say, don't be the raccoon. Keep cutlery at your desk. 2. Do your cubicle rounds. On your way into work in the morning, make sure you do your cubicle rounds. You know, just checking out if anybody's desk is decorated for their birthday. If you spot one, it's a good omen of cake to come. 3. Buddy up. When they find cake, they tell you. When you find cake, you tell them. There's always enough to go around, so why not double your odds of scoring an icing flower? You know you have a great cake buddy when you find a piece of cake covered with a napkin sitting on your desk when you get back from a meeting. Now that's service. Make sure to thank them with a corner slice next time. 4. Know the peak times. Office birthday parties nearly always happen in the afternoon, because this allows someone to run out and grab a cake at lunch. So make sure you're ready and aware of those mid-afternoon fake meetings that turn into birthday parties. Also, it doesn't hurt to swing by the kitchen at 2:30 p.m. to see what's cooking, if you catch my drift. Now, these are all great methods for how to score leftover cake from the office kitchen, but what happens if you're invited to the actual office birthday party itself? Well, don't worry. We've got you covered with one big rule. If you're at the party, don't be the table setter, servant, or salesman. You must make a strong effort to avoid these three dreaded office party tasks because they will delay your cake eating. The table setter is the guy assigned to finding plastic forks, paper plates, and drink cups at the last minute. It's no fun leaving the party to run around and beg for styrofoam. Best show up a bit late or mingle undetected in the back. The servant ends up closest to the cake, just in time to cut it for everyone. Yeah, now you're stuck trying to split up those much too thin paper plates, put a fork on each one, and slice that cake up. It's a lot of pressure being the servant, because everybody is crowding around you and yelling things like, "No, no, no, half that size." And it can all happen so fast that you don't even realize you're the servant until you find yourself in the bathroom 20 minutes later, awkwardly washing the cake knife with cold water and paper towels. The salesman takes the cut pieces of cake and walks around the room, selling them to everybody. If you get the job, your best move is simply asking, "Who doesn't have a piece yet?" and then waggling the cake in people's faces till they take it off your hands. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Now that you've got it down, get ready for some sugar comas, because you're entering a world of all cake all the time. And it will be glorious. Awesome.
Hanging your hand out the car window. On a warm, sunny day in a car with the window open and your hair whipping around everywhere, what's better than letting your hand slip safely out the window and letting it wildly roller coaster against the wind? You know how it is. That speeding car creates a strong and forceful wind pocket that's fun to ride. And as you let it slip and slide across your fingers, you can kind of close your eyes and pretend you're flying. Awesome.
Getting served breakfast in bed. It's Mother's Day, and your kids wake you up with a plate of cold toast, runny eggs, and a short glass of lukewarm OJ. Sure, it may not be the best-tasting meal in the world, and yeah, you might spill crumbs on your sheets, but don't tell me, getting served breakfast in bed isn't the greatest. I mean, there you were, just sleeping, and someone else said, "Let's go downstairs and cook up our best possible meal, toss it on a tray, and bring it upstairs and serve it to you." Yes, serve it to you. Cook it up and set it up and serve it to you. I have to say, you're pretty lucky if this happens to you. Breakfast in bed can also help accomplish the exotic get up and eat up and get back down move. A brilliant Saturday or Sunday feat that involves filling your belly with breakfast and then immediately crashing back into a post-fiesta siesta. It's a great feeling, hitting the sheets and flipping the pillow on that full stomach. And who knows? Maybe there's lunch in bed just waiting for you on the other side of those sleepy dreams. No, honestly, it's a good question. Has anyone ever actually scored lunch in bed? If so, I'm pretty sure you win the world's greatest day ever contest. Now, the trump card for turning a good breakfast in bed into a great one is when it includes one or more of the following. One of those tiny miniature glass bottles of ketchup or jam. A homemade greeting card wishing you a happy Mother's Day or happy birthday. A breakfast dessert of any kind. Butter painstakingly carved into a perfect cube or sphere. Cute restaurant-style folded-up napkins. Let's be honest, people. We sure do love eating. We sure do love sleeping. And breakfast in bed is the closest we get to combining both at the same time. You know what we think of that. Say it with me now. Awesome!
Finally clipping your fingernails after you've been meaning to do it all week. Long fingernails consume me like a drug. Sometimes while buttoning my shirt, I look down and notice my nails have grown a little bit, so I keep buttoning, but silently pledge to trim them at night after I get home. Of course, after work, I generally can't find the nail clipper, so I instead choose to fall asleep on the couch at 8:30 p.m. after scarfing a handful of nachos for dinner. Then I wake up at 3 in the morning, walk to bed with a crink in my neck, and sleep a few more hours until the alarm buzzes, at which point I'll groggily stumble around my place, buttoning up my shirt, silently pledging again to cut my fingernails later that night. This will continue day after day until I've grown a freakishly large set of claws that makes me look like an eagle. Yes, my nails get worse and worse and worse until the moment comes when I can no longer live with myself and finally snap. That's when I run to the drugstore and buy a new set of clippers and maddeningly chop my nails off in a fit of rage. Hey, finally pulling off that big, long-awaited clip is great because it's not a trim. It's a full-on shear. You get the clipper right in the grooves, cutting them bit by bit until the big, sharp shards lie in a crumpled napkin beside you. And you sort of feel a little buzz of pride, relief, and cleanliness, like you just gutted a fish, snipped off your college dreadlocks, or sold all the dusty junk from your basement in a yard sale. Smiling with pride as you inspect your new, tingly, hypersensitive fingertips, you pause for a second and wonder if the world's ready for this whole new you. Awesome.
Coming home after a long day to the smell of someone cooking dinner. Brain boggled, pants greasy, heels too high, tie too tight. Can you feel your heartbeat in your temples? Does your bad breath taste like paint? Is your carpal tunnel syndroming? Because if so, Office Joe, then maybe it's been a long day. Maybe you stapled too many expense reports, got buried under too much homework, or had an inky run-in with a photocopier at the end of the day without an unjammer man around. But you scrape by. You scrape home. You scrape up to the front door, tired and sore, aching from war. As the sun sets behind you, the traffic jams behind you, and your stomach rumbles inside you. That bagel you scarfed 6 hours ago is a distant memory, but you're much too exhausted to do anything besides dial for pizza. And that's what makes it so great when you pop open your door and catch a hot whiff of something sizzling in the kitchen. Even though your clogged up, toner-infused brain can barely soak up anything, you somehow manage to piece things together. Dinner, me, eat. Food, yes, now. And suddenly, there is life. Your lips slowly curl at the corners. Your nose sniffs at the nostrils, and your eyes flash a quick cartoonish sparkle with a faint ding heard somewhere in the background. You've got new energy, so you kick off your shoes, peel off those sweaty socks, and let the saliva start to flow for some tasty eats cooked up hot and fresh by someone you love. Awesome!
Big crowds enjoying big fireworks. Fire trickles and drips across the sky. Old folks huddle and cuddle and babies cry. Teenagers squeeze sweaty palms and look up. Up way high. Because light fills the night. Kabooms bang in the air. Conversations stop. Jaws drop. We all crane our necks up and stare. Yes, when those fireworks erupt, when they splash in the dark, when those bright waterfalls drip down into our park, we all ooh and ah at them big, beautiful sparks. Awesome.
Sleeping with one leg under the covers and one leg out. Home temperature is important. Head in the freezer, hands in the oven, whatever your move, just make it. Pick a temp, baby, then bake it. Pump up the thermostat, bang on the rad, or crank up the air. If you're hot, ditch the sweatpants. If you're cold, slip on slippers. Home temperature is important. If you're not comfortable, you just won't be happy. Roommates want it hotter, spouses want it cooler, and you may want it just right. So you'll need to tweak dials and add layers until you figure it out. And eventually you will. And you'll think everything is great, and everything will be great. Until it comes. Bedtime. Yes, before you flick out the lights and slip into golden slumbers, you must first guess your sleep comfort zone. SCZ, or CZ for short. And CZs ain't easy. If you've ever woken up with the shivers or the sweats, then you added too many blankets or slept too nude. If you're on your own, there are ceiling fans, heating vents, and your general sweatiness to consider. If you're with a pet or a partner, you've got double the hot breath factor and a lot more sweaty legs under the covers. If you're like me, then your eyes might blink open in the middle of the night as you realize you're uncomfortable. And if this happens, then just toss one leg out of the covers and one leg under them, also known as the toe vent. Awesome.
Building a stack of pancakes that looks just like the front of the box. It's no joke, and it takes teamwork, timing, and trust. But building a stack of pancakes that looks just like the front of the box can be one of the most rewarding breakfast experiences of your life. Here's how you can make the magic happen. 1. Assemble a team. You'll need a cook, condimenter, and table setter. The cook should be an early riser and self-starter, with the skill and confidence to cook for a group, as well as a basic understanding of what a circle looks like. Your condimenter needs to understand the value of real butter and decent maple syrup, and know where to find it. A driver's license is necessary here. And lastly, there's the table setter. Prior experience is mandatory. Also a plus is the ability to fold napkins into nice triangles. 2. Night before prep work. Yes, the show begins the night before. The condimenter needs to make sure all the key ingredients are in the house. Is there enough powder in the pancake box? Is the tap water running okay? How about the syrup and butter? If necessary, make a list and go to the store before it closes. We don't want to find out in the morning that something's missing. Nobody will sleep well not knowing. 3. Rest up. It doesn't matter what time you go to sleep. Just make sure you squeeze enough solid hours of golden slumbers in there to power up the juices and get the engine revving the next morning. Remember, groggy kitchen work is sloppy kitchen work. Nobody likes an oblong pancake. 4. Wake up and get down to pancakes. Showtime! Now it's the cook's time to shine. This job is not for the weak-minded. The cook must first set the oven to a low temperature, because that's going to be the holding bay until we have a full stack. This is a slow-building crescendo toward a massive stack of pancakes. Let's not forget that. Once we've got the oven set low, the cook starts doing their thing, tying their hair into a bandana, getting the frying pan warmed up, mixing the batter. There can be no breaks until the full stack of pancakes is cooked, kept warm, and ready to serve. The table setter is busy here, too, pulling out silverware, laying out plates, folding napkins. And rounding out this majestic circus-like performance is the condimenter, busy pouring juice and jigsawing perfect squares of butter. Team, remember what we're playing for here. A towering stack of hot, fluffy pancakes drizzled with sweet, slow-moving syrup, delicately topped with a thick, perfectly melting square of butter. Yes, it takes some time. Yes, it takes real effort. Yes, you will require a solid lineup of team players who never take their eyes off the end goal. But what could be more fun on a weekend morning than creating your very own stack of pancakes that looks just like the front of the box? Hint. Nothing. Awesome.
When your sneeze stalls for a second and then suddenly comes booming out. Your head is a machine. Honestly, just face it. Your face and scalp are really just oily gift wrap over the giant whirring skull factory running full throttle inside your coconut. Just think about what's going on up there. First, you've got sound waves constantly navigating your twisty, waxy ear canals like Luke Skywalker weaving through Death Star trenches. Then there's your nose on permanent high sniff alert, searching out gas leaks in the basement, fresh croissants at the bakery, or coffee aisles in the grocery store. And we can't forget your mouth and nose forever dancing together in the majestic art of breathing. But wait, that's not all. On top of these rickety assembly lines of important head business, you've got blood swirling around, mucus dripping all over the place, and neurons firing and bouncing off walls like a million never-ending games of Pong. Skull Factory is a busy place, folks. The line keeps moving every day, every night, every year, forever. Given how much is going on, it's no wonder the gears get gummed up once in a while. Rogue lashes jam your sockets, popsicles give you brain freeze, and sneezes stall in your clogged up noggin just as they're trying to escape. And you know what that feels like. Face frozen in an awkward crunch, you stare at the ceiling and hold your hand up to your friend, silently pleading with the factory foreman to please, please just let it out. One eye popped open, the other squeezed shut, you clench your cheeks, bend your mouth into a triangle, and feel the lost sneeze pinball around your skull. And then boom. Oh, mama. How good does it feel when that sneeze finally comes screaming out? Really, that sweet release is like someone yanking a red-hot twisted wrench out of your grinding, crunched-up headgears and letting all the oily parts start quietly purring again. Awesome.
Wordless apologies. Tension fills the room, and black clouds linger by the ceiling fan. Dinner was late, bills piled up, nobody called home. Now you're steaming in front of the TV while they're crying softly in the bedroom upstairs. The stalemate burns quietly until they come down, enter the room slowly, grab your shirt sleeves, and look right at you with a pair of warm, moist eyes while starting to give you a soft, smiling apology. But you see them coming, and your stomach churns with a wave of regret. So before they even get it out, you interrupt with a head shake and a hug. Awesome.
The smell and sound of campfire. Slicing a dead tree, tossing it on a pile of dirt, and setting it on fire is pure joy. As that dry, withered stump slowly releases years and years of energy soaked up from the sun, the air, and the ground around it, out come bright lights. Whispering hisses, sizzling pops, and the thick, intoxicating smell of musky smoke and pine needles. You can close your eyes and let your eyelids paint yellow and orange kaleidoscopes as the heat washes over you, rosying up your cheeks and giving you that nice, warm, hot face effect. In that cold, dark forest, on that cold, dark log bench, beside the cold, dark lake, your ears and nose perk up as you focus on every little sound and smell around you. Awesome.
When your suitcase tumbles down the luggage chute first after a long flight. My friends have theories. If you're the first person to check in for the flight, you're pretty much done for. My friend Chad will begin as our plane begins its slow descent. Your suitcase is first in the plane and gets buried under everyone else's golf clubs, guitar cases, and bird cages. No, 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 it's not like that at all, Mike will counter, sipping his Diet Cola and shaking his head slowly. If you're last to check in, you're last one out. Fair is fair. Unless you're in first class or have a special membership tag, they observe the rules of suitcase etiquette. These are big companies. They have standards. You're both wrong, I'll sigh with the pompous air of a frustrated airline CEO. I wish there was a science to it, but honestly, the system's in shambles. Look, if you were tossing back-breaking luggage in the bowels of an airport all day, do you think you'd follow the rules of suitcase etiquette? No, you just grab bags randomly. It's all completely random. Nobody knows what's coming out. The conversation reaching a stalemate, we all shrug and look away from one another. Mike glances out the window at the bright lights below, and Chad flits passively through an in-flight magazine article about resort swimming pools with interesting shapes. Tired and sore, we land, clear customs, and make our way to the luggage belt. Away from the theories and debate, one thing becomes extremely clear. It sure feels great when your suitcase tumbles down the luggage chute first. If this happens, part the anxious crowd, grab your bag, and shuffle outside to get on your way. Smile a big smile because you just won the suitcase jackpot. Awesome!
Peeling off your wet bathing suit and putting on warm clothes after swimming for a long time. Nipples freeze, goosebumps rise, and you get a shaky case of the shivers. Yes, when you jump out of the pool after a long swim, the wind just whips by and chills you to the bone marrow. For a moment, you're frozen in that drippy no man's land between warm, soothing pool water and dry, puffy beach towel. Hair matted to your ears, cold water trickling down your legs. You run across the grass or up the patio stones into the warm embrace of a towel. Quickly, you dry your hair and face, scrub your arms and legs, and then wrap it around you in the classic caped crusader huddled on a skyscraper rooftop pose. And sure, you love the feeling of warming up again, but there's just one nagging problem. That cold, wet bathing suit clinging damply to your rear end. Icy drops drip down your legs until you finally go inside, head to the bathroom, and get the job done in three easy steps. Step 1. Slow peeling. Bikini rockers, you're done in a jiffy here, untying the top and dropping your bottoms into a tiny inside-out mess of wet spandex on the floor. If you're rocking trunks, just peel them down your dry legs, even if they stick and clump awkwardly, until you eventually kick them off in a fit of rage. Step 2. Finish the job. Clammy butt cheeks hanging coldly under the blowing bathroom vent, you grab your towel and complete the dry, this time with intense focus on your nether regions. When you're sure the chilly dampness is finally gone, it's time for heaven. Step 3. Heaven. Slip on the soft cotton and slide up your warm, dry pants. Because you were so cold, it kind of feels like wearing underwear just out of the dryer. You're loving every minute of it, and hurry back to hit the deck for a burger or a beer. You're back, baby. Awesome.
Bedhead all day long. Sure, anybody can wake up with some serious bedhead. Tangled dreads, pillow-dented part, static-flared bangs. Whatever you got, we'll take it. Much like rain hair, bedhead is your temporary ticket to cowlick country. A place where looks just don't matter. It's fun to take a trip and enjoy your citizenship before shampoo, hair straighteners, and sculpting clay step in to mess things up. But I guess that's what makes getting away from it all so great. I mean, just look at babies of the world with their always-on bedhead, sometimes for years on end. Folks, are you thinking what I'm thinking? Yes, we can learn much from the baby. Now, don't get jaded in your old age. there are some classic moves to pull it off. No time, bedhead. This is where you wake up late in a panic and barely have time to throw on jeans and grab keys before bolting out the door for work. This is accidental bedhead and may result in worried finger combing on the bus or a splash of water from the bathroom sink later on. Still, you got bedhead all day and that's what counts here. 5 points. Lazy Sunday bedhead. You wake up at noon, throw on some sweats, have some good friends over, and play video games all day. Or maybe you channel surf with your boyfriend on the futon or watch a golf tournament with grandpa. Either way, no showering is involved, so the bedhead lives long and lives strong. 10 points. Just don't care, bedhead. Top of the charts. This is where your day involves going out and doing things, but you just don't care about your sharp sideways bedhead. If you can pull off grocery shopping, going to class, or hitting the mall with jagged, bent-up hair, then you win. Note that this is not the same as fake bedhead, which involves applying a series of creams and lotions in an attempt to give yourself bedhead-looking hair. No, we're talking about cruising around town with the real thing here, people. 25 points. Yes, bedhead is a temporary escape from that hair prison we all live in every day. Freeing your hair is the first step to freeing your mind and freeing your life. When you get up and let it go, you sort of let yourself go for a moment too. Suddenly, juggling Jane relaxes into cool, casual leg stubble in sweatpants Jane, who's more fun to cuddle up with under a warm blanket in front of a flickering TV. And suit and tie Sam chills into our old pal Couch Dent Sam, who laughs at all our jokes, does great imitations, and doesn't take anything too seriously. Bedhead all day long, people. Because sometimes it's great to ditch the comb and see what happens. Awesome.
Successfully moving all your clothes from the washer to the dryer without dropping anything. Whether you're rinsing undies in the basement of a downtown apartment building, permanently pressing at the local laundromat, or just tumble drying at home, one thing's for certain. That laundry room floor is filthy. Dirt tracks and dust balls coat the cracks and crannies of the joint, so it's always a tense scene when you're moving those wet, twisted clothes from the washer to the dryer. One false move, and your dress shirt gets a cobweb skid mark up the sleeve. Two false moves, and your black socks turn gray and linty. Three false moves, and you're throwing everything back in the washer again. No false moves, and you're laughing. Awesome.
Backseat car windows that go down all the way. When it's a dark summer night, and you're cruising around town, bass thumping, head bumping, rocking out in the backseat, let me ask you something. What feels nicer than slipping your hand out the window and letting that cool breeze wash right over you? If you said, "Not much, baby," then you got it. Listen up, auto industry. To get our summer groove on, we need those backseat windows to drop down all the way. None of this halfway, quarterway, all the way but an inch business. We won't have it. We the people need that non-stop all-drop window. Door factories and window makers, you heard it here first. Stop stopping, start dropping. Because there's nothing quite as frustrating as a window that stops short. Have you ever tried to dangle your arm out a stop-short window? Welcome to a world of cut-off circulation and cold blue hands. Backseat car windows that go down all the way make life sweeter. They blast us with wind and let us rock out with our elbows out, just like the front seat crew. Awesome.
Getting grass stains. First of all, getting grass stains means that you were running around at high speeds without proper equipment. Maybe you slid last minute to avoid a frozen tag or made an awkward somersault dive at a line drive wiffle ball. Either way, the grass stain symbolizes your large devil-may-care investment in having balls-out fun. And that's something worth respecting. See, boring people like myself rarely get grass stains running around because we're always doing it in Umbros and shin pads from 7:30 to 8:25 p.m. on Mondays down at the indoor gym. Now, when you're just running around full throttle in cords and a sweater until you trip on a rock and fall down a hill, my friend, that is something. Walk home with pants full of grass stains, some spicy knee burn, and mud cake shoes, and you've just had yourself a great day. Awesome.
When you know your TV remote so well, you don't even need to look at the buttons. Ever tried to turn on someone else's TV? Brother, we both know that's a tough gig. First, there's the brand name matchup. You stare at three identical-looking black remotes on their coffee table and play Sherlock by matching brand names. You eye the Panasonic logo in the corner of the TV and search for the Panasonic remote on the table. Elementary, my dear Watson. If that doesn't work, you may have to go with the walk-up. When nothing turns on, you toss the remotes on the couch in a fit of rage and walk up to the front of the TV to search for the power button. This works until you want to watch a movie and can't find fancier buttons like TV video. Sometimes you get an out-of-order lecture. Your buddy walks in the room and sees you pushing buttons with Spanish subtitles scrolling across the screen. "What did you press first?" he asks, ripping the remotes out of your hand like puppies you happen to be strangling. "You're doing it out of order." He might even throw in some sarcastic jabs at the end, like, "How could the TV work without the cable box?" Or, "No, no, no, you have to flip the input switch on the universal first." If you've felt this pain, you know how rewarding it can be when you finally master your TV remote. You don't see yourself changing, but one day you look in the mirror and notice you've become a channel surfing all-star. First, you master the ups and the downs, and then you ace the number pad, even after the little nipply thing wears off the 5. When you get that, there's no stopping you. Mute, sleep, it doesn't matter. You don't need to look, and your TV watching efficiency zooms through the roof. Nobody flips channels like you. Nobody cranks the volume when mom starts vacuuming like you. And nobody pushes mute and answers the phone in one ring like you. Nobody can touch you, baby. You made it. Awesome.
When you hear someone's smile over the phone. Living in a big city can be lonely. Friends scatter and splatter in all directions, and people dear to your heart fling themselves across state lines, borders, and deep dark oceans. And while calling your friends has gotten a lot cheaper, let's be honest, it's still hard to line everything up perfectly for a long phone call. There are time zones, there are answering machines, and there's the general difficulty of jumping into someone's life for an hour when they're in the middle of living it. Despite these issues, once in a while, you land one of those special 1 or 2 hour phone calls with a close friend far, far away. If you're lucky, after the first 20 minutes of what's new at work with the kids, with the folks, and with people both of us know, but one of us knows better, it might fall into that healthy back-and-forth banter where it seems like no time has passed. That's the best part of the phone call. Joking like you're back in the dining hall at college before a long Friday night. Chatting like you're sharing a bunk bed and whispering on Christmas Eve. And laughing like you're still young and still married. Sometimes, if you listen close enough, you can hear those smiles shining through the phone like laser beams, and they tug on your heart as your brain lapses and enjoys some great times with a loving friend. Awesome.
Returning to your warm and comfy bed after getting up to pee in the middle of the night. blind and stumbling. You grunt and scratch your way back to your wrinkled sheet cave after an epic journey through the frozen bathroom wilderness. Awesome.
Moving up a shoe size when you're a kid. Some everyday appliances look like they were recovered from a flying saucer at the bottom of the ocean. Complicated bunny ear wine decorkers, handheld metal grabbers that lift out garden weeds, and of course, that heavy metal device used to measure your foot at the shoe store. But I guess there's a reason for it. If a handful of rulers were just lying around, there would be much less suspense when you moved up a shoe size. Mom would grab a ruler, stick it on your foot, and snag you a new pair of loafers. But with the Foot Measuring Machine 2000 from outer space, there is drama. First, the gal at the store has to find one under a chair somewhere, then she brings it over and squats in front of you, then she places your heel in it, twiddles some dials up, takes a breath, looks up, and announces your shoe size. 7. Awesome.
Perfectly popped microwave popcorn. We've all been there, staring nervously into the micro-glow at the fat, puffed-up bag of popcorn calmly spiraling in the center of the dish like no big deal. But it is a big deal, and you know it's a big deal, because despite the puff bag's straight face, there's a minute left, the bag looks full, the pops are slowing down, and you don't know when to pull the plug. It's tense. Stop too soon and you'll enjoy some well-popped corn, but be left with handfuls of greasy, unpopped kernels at the bottom of the bag. Your stomach will rumble and you'll either stay hungry or pop more and overeat. Stop too late and you'll enjoy some well-popped corn, but some kernels will be burnt. The bag will be smoky and your fire alarm could have a fit. We don't want that either. Yes, that's why it's so great when your microwave pops popcorn perfectly. Either you grow to trust your dependable popcorn button, or you slowly master the timing yourself. How good does it feel when you pull out that perfect steaming bag and pour it in a big bowl as the movie starts? Awesome!
That one really good pen that never gets lost. You know the one. The cap is long gone, the end is chewed up, but that trusty ballpoint, she keeps flowing like Niagara Falls. Loyal, fail-safe, and inky to the bone, that one really good pen might be stashed on top of the fridge, deep in a dresser drawer, or down at the bottom of the pencil case. But it's stashed. And it's handy, and it does the deed just fine. Now sure, once in a while, you might even think you've lost your trusty old pen. You don't see her for a few weeks, maybe a few months. You figure she accidentally rolled under the stove, mistakenly got garbage, or worse, was hoodwinked by a callous and immoral pen thief, masquerading as a fiddly-dee, aw shucks, pen borrower. There is a period of grieving. But one random day, you just find her again. Sure enough, sleeping soundly in your winter jacket pocket or lounging around carefree in the old Scrabble box. It always seems to happen when you least expect it. And isn't there just something about that one really good pen that's always kicking around? Yes, in these days of kitchen whiteboards, visual voicemail, and text messages, it's nice having a steady Eddie pen by your side. Because that pen is something real, something honest, and something worth loving. Awesome!
When you're driving late at night on an empty gas tank and a gas station appears on the horizon. When it's late at night, on a lonely road, and your fuel gauge starts flirting with the big E, it's gut check time. First, you enter fuel preservation mode, and start accelerating really slowly and coasting nonchalantly through stop signs to save your precious remaining fumes. Next, maybe you fall into a bit of a blame game, wondering why you let yourself get to this terrible place and pledging never to do it again. After that, it's time for survival mode, where you make a mental checklist of all the emergency food and supplies you have in the car, imagining yourself building a napkin blanket to keep warm and eating restaurant mints and ketchup packets to survive. And then finally, when hope is almost lost, with that fuel light burning brightly, that steering wheel gripped tightly and those hands shaking slightly, you drive up another dark, lonely hill and finally notice some blissful, heaven-sent gas station lights appearing just over the horizon. Awesome.
Remembering what movie that guy is from. Smack dab in the middle of the movie's big scene, it always happens. Everything gets tense for the courtroom finale or championship football game. And then all of a sudden, the defense attorney or opposing coach turns out to be that guy from some other movie. And you just can't stop thinking about where he's from. Wait, was he the prison guard in Shawshank? The lawyer from Miracle on 34th Street? Or no, I got it. He's the knife guy from Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Awesome!
Using rock, paper, scissors to settle anything. While traveling on a road trip across the states a couple years ago, my friend Ty, Chris, and I ended up staying at a hotel that had beautiful double beds cordoned off in private rooms, and one thin piece of felt spread over a hard metal frame in the middle of the common area. Clearly, there were two good places to sleep, and one joke of a pullout that came with a free day full of back pain at no extra charge. So, we stood in the front hallway and surveyed the situation, bags in hand, stern looks on our faces. We knew decisions needed to be made and quick. After sleeping in basements and on motel floors for a week, we all finally had a chance of getting a good night's sleep. We had to settle it. Well, first of all, we ended up giving Chris one of the rooms since he actually found the place and we were driving his car. It was a gift, and Chris took it immediately without a word, leaving Ty and I to fight over the remaining room. Well, we were through being nice guys. We both wanted that room bad. So we agreed to settle it the only way we knew how, with a long, drawn-out, best-of-seven rock-paper-scissors war. Quickly, we took care of logistics. We agreed to shoot on the count of three instead of right after. Any double-clutching would be interpreted as a rock, no questions asked. We ruled out celebrating each win with the ceremonial action move, where you snip your scissor fingers across their palm paper or smash their scissor fingers with your rock fist. No need for any gloating. And lastly, we made doubly sure that it was a best of seven. Nothing more, nothing less, no extensions. Whoever got four wins first got the good bed because it was game over. With that, we dropped our bags, steadied our fists in front of us, and sized each other up, cracking our necks and loosening our shoulders for the big game. And so it began. I opened with rock, soundly shattering Ty's flimsy scissors. Ty then countered with scissors again, falling once more to my sturdy rock. Then Ty switched gears to paper, but I was ready this time, employing his very own scissors to slice him to bits. Down 3-0 in a flash, Ty called for a quick pause. "I need to think," he said, "and I'll never forget it." He looked me square in the eye for a moment, squinted a bit, laughed, and then said, "All right, I'm ready." The next three rounds were a nightmarish blur. His paper smothered my rock, his scissors snipped my paper, there were a couple of draws, and then he completed the comeback with a fateful suffocating of my once sturdy rock with his murderous sheet of airtight paper. He quickly tied it up with that move, and so it all came down to the final toss. Before we threw our fists, I peeked behind me at the open bedroom door, the setting sun casting warm shadows across the shiny silk bedspread, a flat-screen TV propped up on the wood dresser, a little loot bag of mini toiletries lying across the fluffy pillows. I looked, and I dreamed, and I drew. And a one, two, three.